Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Wow, did we get some very important documents and information that for all of us who have followed the Idaho 4 case since the murders happened on November 13th of 2022, we've all, wanted to know what the 911 call said, wanted to know if there were communications between the surviving roommates that had been rumored occurred. We're going to break it all down here in really a lot of specificity. I posted many of the documents on my Twitter. Quite frankly, you know, these are motions, motion in limine and other motions. And so it was hard to put it all on there. I tried to really piecemeal out the most important documents page by page for us to discuss. Also, I saw some really interesting questions and comments on Twitter. I'm going to get to each of those because I think they're important, generally speaking, for everyone. As many of you know, Zanna Kernodle, Ethan Chapin, Kaylee Gonsalves, and Maddie Mogan were viciously murdered with a K-bar knife back in on November 13th of 2022 in Moscow, Idaho. We are going to be discussing what happened after their deaths and by and between Dylan Mortensen and Bethany Funk. This was a three-story house. Kaylee and Maddie were in Maddie's room, which was an upstairs room. Murphy, Kaylee's dog, was also in the home, but was actually in Kaylee's room, not with Maddie or Kaylee. Maddie were in the same bed when they were murdered. On the second floor was Ethan Chapin and Zanna, his girlfriend. Ethan did not live there, but he was spending the night there. Everyone, including the four deceased victims and the roommates who survived, went out and partied that night. And they partied late. They got home around, 2 in the morning, I believe, from my memory. They were out and about. They were what I would call normal college kids partying. This was a party house. And they liked to go out and have drinks and then go to the grub truck and come home. Zanna had actually ordered a little snack on through Jack in the Box and Uber Eats. And on their way home, actually after the Grubhub stop, Kaylee and Maddie actually got into a rideshare and were taken to the house. But nevertheless, they were out late and there was drinking involved. Bethany again slept in the first bedroom floor while Dylan was in the second bedroom floor. I want to get right down into the text messages that occurred between Bethany and Dylan. I had a kind of an odd question asked on Twitter, but I truly think it wasn't meant to be mean because I know this account. It was because they're just starting to follow this case. And they ask if Dylan was female. I want to make it very clear to everybody, because I've seen this. You know, Dylan is a female. She was 19 years old at the time. She's around 21 right now. But she's very female and a beautiful, beautiful girl that will be traumatized the rest of her life. This is what happened at 4:28 and 08 seconds. Dylan texts Bethany. No one is answering. Dylan texts Bethany again. I'm really confused. Right now, RN right now. Then Dylan texts Kaylee. Kaylee. That's in quotes. Then Dylan texts Kaylee again. What's going on? Now, I've had a lot of people say, why didn't they just get out? You see this intruder walk by. You see all this happening. Why are you texting? Now, first of all, these are young people. And young people are all about convenience. And they use their phones and they text without a thought. In other words, this is no big deal, in my opinion. No, she didn't go check on her. This is in the middle of the night. It's dark. She is under the influence and she's not sure what's happening. She's confused, but she does reach out via text, which makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know about everybody else here, and I'd love to hear what you have to say. But for those of you who, no matter the size of your house, if you want to reach out to your child and say it's time for dinner, do you scream across the house like our parents did? Do you go to their room, you know, and leave your fillet of tilapia and your dirty rice that's cooking because it's about ready to be served up? Do you have your husband go do it? Whatever it might be. I'm just saying that with the advent of cell phones now, I know personally, and I'd love to hear from you, but when you live in a big house and they lived in a big house, it's not unusual to call your child. Hey, come on, we're getting ready to leave on a trip. Or, hey, it's time to eat. Or hey, are you okay in there? Or, you know, come on down. We're all getting ready to play cards, whatever it might be. I personally don't go to their rooms and reach out. And I'd love, like I said, to hear from you all, but I think it's because the advent of cell phones. Add on to that, triple that situation, because young people are hooked to their phones. That's how they communicate. They do everything through them. So that was one of the questions on Twitter. Isn't it so odd that she doesn't just go check on her? No, I don't consider it odd. There's also, you know, something to be said, I guess, for the privacy thing. Again, she has no idea. She sees this stranger, which she believes is a stranger, which is clear from not only what we saw in the probable cause affidavit, but now we're seeing it reinforced in text messaging that is corroborative evidence, which is exactly why the prosecution put what they put in the probable cause affidavit, because it's supported by independent information, which are these text messages. So this is exactly what you're looking for to see if witnesses are telling the truth. And this made it abundantly clear that Dylan Mortensen was telling the truth. Okay, fifth line. Then Bethany says to DM, yeah, dude, WTF. Then Bethany says to DM, Zanna was wearing all black. And I think this is clear to me that she's trying to say, hey, Dylan, could it have been Zanna because she was wearing all black when she was out that night? Could it have been Zanna? Or yeah, Zanna. I think that's what the message that Bethany's trying to give to Dylan Mortensen. And Dylan says, I'm freaking out right now. She says, no, it's like a ski mask almost. So a ski mask also almost. That's how Dylan describes what the person's wearing. Not, you know, Zanna dressed in all black, but basically describing the ski mask that covered the entirety of the head and the face. She goes into more details. Bethany then says, STFU, right? She's not understanding this. She's trying to process everything. Remember, people, no matter their age, are going to make logical conclusions and have logical thoughts based on their experiences. So these girls have never been in a situation like all of us. None of us have ever been in a situation of a quadruple murder. None of us, I would say, unless there's somebody out here that's been a victim in this way, has had somebody enter their home and brutally slash their loved ones with a K-bar knife. This is nothing you would just jump to as, oh, I bet they're going to be murdered. Oh, I bet a horrific murder took place in my house. That's not what you would be thinking, because your files in your head, I call them our recordings, right? What we know, what we've seen from our experience, they're not going to lead Bethany and Dylan to anticipate the carnage that ended up being in that house. Yes, Dylan saw somebody. Yes, she's confused by it all. Could it have been a burglar? Could somebody have just broken in and stolen something? Yeah, she's confused. She knows that there was recent activity with the dog. You know, she's kind of irritated, thinking that Kaylee is playing with Murphy and wants him to be quiet. She keeps peeking out the door, you know, if you watch the probable cause affidavit. And then when she sees the intruder walk by dressed in all black with the ski mask on, she's terrified. And I also want to comment that this is just a snippet of what we are going to find out from Dylan. I've had a lot of people and seen a lot of people on social media that are out of their minds saying, see, they lied on the affidavit. There's nothing about her being frozen in fear. There's nothing about this. There's nothing about that. They have hours of interviews with Dylan and with Bethany, meaning law enforcement. These girls have told them so much. They've reached deep into the recesses of their memories. What they told law enforcement back then is what's most likely going to be the most fresh and most meaningful in terms of their recollections of what happened. But believe me, there are pages and pages of what we call FD-302s, which the FBI would have been involved in those interviews. I don't know who did the write-up. But no matter what, whether they're MOIs, you know, memorandums of interviews or 302s, whatever, what that all mumbo jumbo means is there's going to be interviewed information from them, and it's going to far exceed anything we saw in the probable cause affidavit and certainly anything we see in these text messages. So for those of you on your platforms, when you see people come on or you're on somebody else's platforms following this and you see them berating the cops that they're lying, berating the cops that the probable cause affidavit is inaccurate, berating these survivors, please tell them to, you know, get off, block them, mute them, because they have no idea what they're talking about. Zero idea what they're talking about. And those people have me pretty irritated today, because to victimize Dylan and Bethany all over again and what they've gone through over the last over 2 years that this case has floundered sitting around in the legal system due to Brian Koberger's attorneys. I mean, literally, we're looking at motions and having hearings over and over again. And it's irritating to see what happens on social media every time something hits and how they go after these roommates. So I'm very staunch on that, because these girls were young, 19, and they did the best they could to understand what had happened at the time. Okay, then Dylan says to Bethany, like he had something over his head or head and a little and mouth. And she's describing, you know, the black head covering and then over the mouth and this whole area where, you know, nothing is visible, like a ski mask. And so she's just being very specific. And this is such good news, I think, for the prosecution, because a lot of people, everybody's wondering what state of inebriation was Dylan in? Was she able to process? Was she about to pass out drunk? Was she, you know, stumbling and mumbling? It doesn't appear from what we see here. She's so specific when she describes the mask. She's so steadfast that, no, it's not Xana. it's not Xana in black. They had a mask on. I think this is very good for the prosecution because it shows more clearly her state of mentality. Then DM says to Bethany, "I'm not kidding. I'm so freaked out." Then Bethany says, "So am I." Then DM says to Bethany, "My phone is going to die. F-U-C-K. And then Bethany says, "Come to my room." Bethany says, "Run, run down here." So does Dylan's phone die? I think it probably does. Why do we know that? Because it appears that the phone call that was made, the 911 call that Slater made, is made from Bethany's phone, not from Dylan's phone. So did the phone die? And I know everybody has said on Twitter, but what about a charger? These girls should have a charger in her room. Yeah, on a perfect day, you have a charger in your room. But what if she didn't have the charger in her room? We don't know. But we also don't necessarily know she ran down there with Bethany. I need to look and make sure there's no further clarification. She certainly begs her to come down. And she could have come down. She could have went down there. And certainly, I think she did at some point. People are asking, why didn't they just leave? There was a fraternity house there, all these things. I'm telling you from experience, when people are terrified, you stay where you know the situation, where you feel safe. You would never go into purposefully a situation where you thought either an intruder could be there or a situation that you didn't know what was happening. You certainly wouldn't leave the house and run if you didn't have somebody chasing you, right? Or if you didn't know for sure that you were in physical peril. It's much safer. And I would actually argue that her decision of staying in her room and shutting the door was much safer than if she would have entered and been looking for the alleged murderer, Brian Koberger. Certainly much safer. I mean, she's here today because of the actions that she decided to take, albeit certainly ignorant as to the threat that really existed out there, certainly frantically not understanding it. People have made a lot, and we're going to move on to the 911 call in a minute, but people have made a lot out of the fact that there was this huge gap, you know, about an 8-hour gap between when Dylan Mortensen makes these text calls. And they only last a couple of minutes, by the way. It's 4:22:08, I believe, to 4:24:27. I actually forgot the 24 when I wrote in my Twitter, so I apologize for that. But basically about 2 minutes that these texts are going back and forth. And it's clear there's going to be a lot more text messages. We haven't seen all the ones where she was texting Kaylee. We just see this, you know, snippet where she says they're not answering. You know, I'm sure she reached out to Maddie, maybe Xana, maybe Ethan even. We don't know. We have the smallest snippet, but this snippet so well corroborates information that we know of from Dylan. And like I said, there's going to be a lot more that we see. I want to go on to the 911 call. Oh, yes. So why didn't the 911 call right then? A lot of people are asking that. You know why they're asking that? Because they have hindsight. We all have hindsight. It makes a lot of sense now. Oh my gosh, they should have called 911. Well, they didn't know exactly what they had. Again, they were inebriated. And I've always said from the beginning that Dylan and Bethany, they likely passed out. In other words, not passed out like, you know, they were so wasted they passed out, but they went to sleep. They went to bed with all this anxiety and worry. Was it the right move? You know, hindsight? No, they should have called 911. It's a miracle. It's a miracle they lived through this. It really is. And they will forever have what they call survivor's guilt. They will forever think that it should have been them. They will forever be traumatized by this night. And just reading the information that we see there, for me, and I'm sure many of you who have followed this case, it brings it all to life. reading these words that these girls were going through and their confusion. And so hopefully, I think this will be admitted by the judge, because that's what the motion is all about. I think all of this is going to be admitted, and I think it's going to paint a picture of what these girls went through. Let's move on now to the actual 911 call that was placed. All right. So it starts off with, of course, the dispatcher saying 911 location and emergency. So A, meaning answer, on the transcript that we see, actually, do they say A means answer? I want to make sure. A equals woman, yes. But anyway, they've designated it as A. Maybe it was because they were going in chronological, A1, A2, A3. But nevertheless, it's a woman. They don't say whether it's Bethany or Dylan, but it is clearly Bethany or Dylan. And I'll tell you why we know that. We know that because they specifically talk about something happened in our house. So it can only be Bethany or Dylan that made the call. And then they give the address, 122. So as you know, if you go visit a friend, you may or may not exactly off the top of your head be able to recite their address. They then say 122, again, confirmation that it's Dylan or Bethany. And they talk about, is it a house? Yes, it's a house. Can you repeat the address? Then A1 gets on the phone. Now, A1, who they described in the transcript as woman one, A1 is the neighbor. She says that. She says, I'll talk to you. We live at the right, so we're next to them. So I believe this to be the neighbor that came over in all the commotion. And she takes over. Why does she take over? I believe, and even though, you know, these are written words, so we can't hear. We'll, in trial, they'll be able to hear the hysteria, the crying, what's happening. But we know from court documents that's what's happening. And I hope to post some of them today. But essentially, they talk about the person getting on, and she repeats the address. So to me, it was a cooler head that came on, somebody that was likely less emotional than Bethany and Dylan were being. And that's why the neighbor took over the 911 call. They talk about the phone number. That's all blacked out. And then she says, the dispatcher saying, okay, but what's really going on? She's very focused on what's going on at that time. And that's when the neighbor says, one of our roommates, and then she changes it to one of the roommates, because she doesn't live there, who's passed out and she was drunk and she's not waking up. Okay. They are clearly, and it actually says in the motion of limine that I didn't post, they are talking about Xana. They're clearly talking about Xana being passed out and not waking up. The dispatcher says, okay. And she says, and they saw some man in the house last night. Yeah. So she's already, Dylan and Bethany have told her about this man being in the house. Again, all this corroboration that shows the truthfulness of Dylan. And that she repeated it to the neighbor. And so, but they're talking about Xana. And are you with the patient? I need somebody to keep the phone, stop passing it around. So clearly there's a lot of commotion going on with this dispatcher, and she can hear that the phone is changing hands, probably multiple conversations and people and crying and hysteria. When we hear that call, I think that's what we're going to hear, even though we can't see it on these pages per se. Then she says, Dylan or Bethany get back on the phone. A1 is now off the phone. The neighbor's off and says, can I just tell you what happened, pretty much? And to me, the weirdness that's happening here is the dispatcher wants to just get to this passed out girl. She wants to be able to guide them on rendering aid, on really trying to figure out what we have here. And so she's trying to keep them on task with what's going on there. But it's clear that Dylan and Bethany are concerned, whoever's A is answering, trying to tell this dispatcher about last night, about this man who was in the house. So clearly their thought process is in large part on that with the dispatcher. But the dispatcher says, when she asked if I could tell you what happened, the dispatcher says, what is going on currently? Is someone passed out now? That's when Dylan and or Bethany, one of them says, I don't really know, but pretty much at 4 a.m. So do you see what's happening? They're trying to ask about Zanna. I don't think that the girls, Bethany or Dylan, that are responding, they are so much more concerned about what happened at 4 a.m. They're not even really concentrating because they think Zanna is passed out drunk. What they're concerned about is this intruder that was in there. So they keep diverting the conversation with the dispatcher back to what they're concerned about, which is the person that it was at the house at 4 a.m. All right. Let me get back on my screen. Apologies. All right. Going back again. All right. She says, but I want to tell you pretty much at 4 a.m. And that's when the dispatcher cuts her off again and says, okay, I need to know what's going on now. If someone passed out, can you find that out? So this dispatcher isn't even allowing Bethany / Dylan to tell them about what happened at 4 a.m. And I'm not blaming the dispatcher. I think the dispatcher is trying to deal with what she's trying to figure out, if it's a life that needs to be saved. But I'm just saying this is important to me. And I think it's important, hopefully, to everybody, that Dylan and Bethany are very concerned about what happened the night before concerning the intruder. Then they go on and the dispatcher says, okay. And then they pass the phone off again to the neighbor. And I'm sure Bethany and Dylan at this point are irritated. They're trying to explain, they're probably in hysteria, what all has transpired, and they're not getting any reciprocation from the dispatcher. So they pass the phone off again. And at that point, the neighbor says, hello, hello. And the dispatcher says, okay, I need somebody to stop passing the phone. I've talked to 4 different people. So the dispatcher is very irritated. And then the neighbor says, okay, sorry, they just gave the phone to me. And then the dispatcher, is she breathing? And then the neighbor, hello. So it's clear to me also by all of this happening that there's so much confusion and people are having trouble even understanding or hearing. In other words, it seems as if the neighbor, because she keeps saying, are you there? Hello, hello, to the 911 dispatcher. She can't hear, likely because of all the commotion. And I think when we get the 911 tape, is going to be fraught with hysteria and crying and sadness, and it's going to be very difficult to listen to. So then the neighbor keeps apologizing. I'm sorry. The dispatcher, is she breathing? Again, the neighbor, hello, is she breathing? The neighbor says, no. The dispatcher says, okay. Then the dispatcher says, a different dispatcher says, okay, en route. Then the neighbor says, Bethany or Dylan, I need you to talk with them, okay? I can't talk to them. I need you to talk to them. So now the neighbor, I think, likely distracted with Zanna. They're not distracted, but trying to figure out Zanna. Passes the phone off. She's calling on Dylan. You guys take this. I'm dealing with Zanna. That's how I read that. Now, this is really important. And everyone is blowing up about this. Why? if there was so much blood that we saw blood, which was accurate, dripping down the outside of the house that had gone through, you know, the wood where it interfaces with, I believe there was concrete block right there, but nevertheless, where it dripped on the outside of the house. How can you have that much blood and have Zanna laying there, not in a pool of blood? I'm going to tell you, because I've seen people that have been stabbed. I have treated people as a tactical medic, tactical EMT, I should say. I want to be very specific. They call us tactical medics, but there's paramedics and there's EMT, and I'm an EMT. I've treated people who have been stabbed, and I can tell, one woman was stabbed multiple times, bam, 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 by her boyfriend. And she was walking and talking, even though she had a perforated lung. When a knife goes in and it's not, jagged, edged particularly, but when it smoothly goes in and comes right back out, the skin closes. And unless they've hit an artery, oftentimes those stab wounds close with very little blood coming out. It's the same thing with a gunshot wound. If you ever have seen somebody shot and seen it in person, or applied an occlusive dressing for nurses or medics out there, it's not what you imagine. Blood spewing everywhere. The reason that Kaylee and Maddie, I believe their necks are going to be cut. I believe they got the carotid arteries. I believe they stabbed in the chest. I believe they 100% in a horrible manner bled out quickly and horribly. And there was blood everywhere and would have been blood everywhere. But Zanna, I believe, was, of course, stabbed. And we haven't seen the autopsy. I'm just saying this from experience, that there are severe internal damage that occurs when you are stabbed. And you can bleed out completely within and not have, pints of blood spilling from you. And I think that's what we're going to find with Zanna. I'll always wonder if Zanna couldn't have been saved. I think Steve Gonsalves talked about this, that he doesn't believe so, from what he knew, that their wounds were too serious, for them to have been saved, any of the kids. But with Zanna, we don't know exactly where she was stabbed, but I think we know where she wasn't stabbed, and that wasn't in the neck. I don't think her throat is going to be sliced open. It wasn't in a situation where she had this excessive bleeding, and I think that's what is so confusing. I posted some pictures of stab wounds, real stab wounds, what they look like, and you're going to be surprised. It's in and out, and they close up. For those of you who have ever been on a farm, who have ever dealt with slicing and stabbing and, animals, whether it's cutting off their scrotum, castration, or, we raised rabbits. We killed the rabbits, killed them, prepared them, skinned them, ate them. Same with chickens. We had a full working farm that we ate off of. For those of you or hunters who understand what a knife does, it may not be what you think and what all these people on Twitter think, that she'd be laying in this huge, gigantic pool of blood if she bled out. She could have bled out more from within and not had the blood that you would expect, not had the blood like Maddie and Kaylee had. All right. I'm going to move on. It's so hard to think about. All right. I want to move on to, The question, so we can't hear, basically what happens is, again, the neighbor calls for Bethany and Dylan to get on. Dylan or Bethany get on because it reverts back to A answering, right? Bethany or Dylan. And they're unintelligible, which basically means I think it's going to be they're hysteric. It's unable to make out what they're saying. And the dispatcher is trying her darndest. She says the patient is not conscious, not breathing. So that tells me that she thinks that is what they're trying to tell her, that Xana is not conscious and not breathing. Let me see. I want to tell you when the 911 call was placed. Actually, I'll give you the chronology. Between 4 a.m. and 4:17, the murders occur. At 4:19, the surviving roommate calls all three victims, but none answer. At 4:22 to 4:24, the surviving roommate, Dylan and Bethany, have these text interchanges. At 4:27, the surviving roommate calls the victim again without success. At 4:32, the surviving roommate texts Kaylee saying, please answer. So now we're already, you know, well into 6 minutes or so after the crimes took place. At 10:23, so now we have a big lapse. We have 6 hour lapse. And then all of a sudden, so I think Dylan and Bethany likely fall asleep during the 6 hours. But at 10:23, Dylan is awake because she texts the victims again and none of them answer. Then we have another gap of an hour or so. And that's when Dylan calls her father. That's very telling to me. I mean, she's held up in this room. She doesn't know what happened. And quite frankly, she's too frozen in fear, as she describes it, because we know that it's in the affidavit. And I'm sure she's described herself as that way multiple times. And who does she reach out to? Her father, which this is so normal with victims that have gone through this. They call a family member. That's before 911, when they're terrified and scared. Then at midnight, or I'm sorry, not at midnight, at 12 noon, the 911 call is placed again from Bethany's phone, not from Dylan's phone. So it's likely, or at least possible. I'm not going to say it's likely. I'm going to say it's possible that Dylan's phone did indeed die, and that it was charged as she slept, and then she wakes up and she again calls her father and reaches back out to those roommates. So this timeline is really important. Everybody wants to know, why did it take all this time? At least we get to see an insight as to what was happening. All right. I want to talk a little bit about the next pages. So then the 911 call operator starts talking about, is there a defibrillator? Now, a lot of people said, what party house has a defibrillator? No, that wouldn't necessarily be normal. And they say, no, there isn't one there. But it seems as if somebody has one. And I think it's going to be law enforcement that it seems enters the scene by this particular time in the transcript. And so somebody then says, yes, we have one. And then that's when line 13 of this transcript, because there's an officer there we know at this time. And he says, I think we have a homicide. So, you know, clearly it was law enforcement when they got on scene that recognized what had happened to Xana. And then, of course, we know later recognized what happened to all the kids. It's also, I believe, that many of them weren't even up and around Xana. You know, they were more outside. That's what the information we have. I also want to read something from Clear back in the day, right after this happened. And many of you might remember all of the information that was floating around. Sorry, I'm just pulling this up. I also want to show you like what a stab wound can look like. I know people said I have too much glare and I need to start getting, I have no pictures on my computer. I do everything on my phone. I do nothing on my computer but stream. And you see how clean it is and that it closes around. I know this one has been cleaned, but I posted some that haven't been cleaned. That's still what happens to the wound. I just wanted to let people know that. I want to ask if any of you remember this, where people were talking about what happened, right? Because the rumor mill takes hold. And I've always said that those rumors that happened right after this, that there's probably a lot of truth in them. Not 100% truth, but a lot of truth. It says, so somebody answered, I just answered this. I've been lurking here for a while, and this is why I've been hesitant to say anything. People aren't allowing for nuance. Yes, the police did say that the roommate summoned friends because they thought someone was unconscious. From what my friend told me, and again, this is secondhand, they were concerned that Zanna hit her head, but they weren't sure, so they tried to find Ethan. When they couldn't, they summoned his friend looking for Ethan. And perhaps that is this other male that actually comes on to the call, Evan, and identifies himself to the 911 caller. And he says, I don't know how the rest played out exactly, but from what's been reported, this friend went over to the house and found the bodies. So anyway, there was a lot of confusion after that, a lot of dissemination of information from various people, you know, friends who their friend told them. I mean, obviously that's going to happen. And so I just find it interesting that a lot of the stuff we heard early on has come to bear. In other words, that they truly thought Zanna, a lot of people thought it might've been Dylan a long time ago, but now we know it was Zanna that they wondered about. I want to look and make sure there are no quick questions here that I need to answer. I want to talk about some other questions that came up on Twitter, because I tell you, Twitter X, they always have such great questions. You know, again, I think I've addressed it. What stopped them from calling 911? First of all, Dylan's phone, I think, did die. I don't think it's clear whether she actually ran down to Bethany's room and they fell asleep or not, or went down there later. I don't know if she went down there right at that moment. But nevertheless, I don't think they called 911 because it wasn't in their mind that something this horrific could have happened, obviously. Let me see. Okay. This was a big one. A lot of people said, why is this being released? Well, first of all, I put in a tweet regarding all of the secrecy in this case, specifically the fact that so much has been designated as sealed, right? Every time something comes out for the last 2.5 years, yep, we're sealing it. Well, typically, you only seal when you're talking about informants, when you're getting ready to make arrests, so you can't let the public know, obviously, that you're looking at other people. You can't divulge any sort of information that could give up techniques of law enforcement. Nobody wants that out there. You can't divulge information that could hurt anybody, you know, cause result in their life being hurt, or further victimize these victims. In other words, crime scene photos and things like that. So it makes sense that a lot of this would be sealed. But what Judge Hippler, the new judge on this case, has said, he said, listen, there's way too much of it. Stop. And you could see, instead of, I think prior to this, these motions would have been sealed where we couldn't have seen these details. We couldn't see the goriness. We couldn't see the hysteria. We couldn't know the details. He is letting it come out there now because he's saying, I believe that, listen, you can't blanket a case like this, any case, really, even though Delphi did it. You can't just close down a case and say nobody can see anything unless you have those factors that I talked about, because then every case would be sealed up tight and no one, there'd be no public disclosure. But a lot of people are upset. You know, they feel like this is terrible for the victim families to have to read and see. They feel like this is going to spin a lot of social media rumors and a lot of social media wrath. And that's where we all come into play. We have to put, you know, a complete end to that on our platforms. You block them all the people who are trying to victimize the families of these victims and trying to victimize Kaylee and Bethany, and you just you block them, you mute them, you make sure that they don't have any place on your platform. That's what I'm going to do. Obviously, we'll discuss any reasonableness, but I can't roll with people victimizing and victim shaming and blaming Bethany and Dylan when they had no idea what's going on and were terrified. And that's blatantly clear in these calls or text messages and call. Let's see. Okay. A lot of questions about why the killer did not kill Bethany and Dylan. I believe I've always said this. He had a target, and that target was Maddie Mogan. That's my belief. Kaylee wasn't supposed to be there. Her car that would have been, I believe, known to the killer who went there 12 times. And there's a big difference between stalking and surveilling. As an FBI agent, you do a lot of surveillance, but you don't stalk people, meaning you don't call them, you don't leave them messages, you don't try to harass them. In fact, the last thing you want them to know is that you're there, right? What you do is you surveil and try to learn their movements. And that is exactly what I believe happened with Brian Koberger, who's been accused of this. I think there is evidence that he did that. Moving on, why didn't he kill Dylan right there? Listen, I think he went in to kill Maddie. Kaylee was there, obviously had to kill her. Then as he's leaving out, Zanna was up with, you know, TikToking and, or Instagramming. And, I believe it was Instagram that she was using, but whatever. She was on her social media. She was on her devices. She had just ordered at 4 o'clock, Jack in the Box. She's eating and he kills her. And he kills Ethan when Ethan likely tries to come to her aid. And that's a lot of killing. It's a lot of emotion, cathartic emotion. Remember, I truly believe that this was a cathartic killing. In other words, built up in him over years, hatred, anger, you know, type of girl he could never have, being rebuffed, being a dork, being, you know, not being popular. Everything that he wanted is what was encapsulated in Maddie. And he came after it that night. Can you imagine the peak of all of that, how emotional that would be? And then the amount of force, energy, violence used to kill four people. He would have been tired. He would have also been in a state of these people picture what they're going to do. They play it out in a fantasy. And now everything that he thought it would be like didn't happen. I still believe he firmly intended to sexually assault, because at the end of the day, I still believe the murder, the initial murder, his initial motive was to own her, you know, to completely dominate her. And now everything's all messed up. It's in complete chaos of how he pictured all this to be. And so he's leaving, and now there's a witness. Of course, he knows he's completely covered. Sure, he believed that, you know, maybe that witness wouldn't even see the details of his bushy eyebrows, but they did. And he exits and he's not looking for any more. He wants to survive this, meaning he doesn't want to get caught. It's the last thing he wants to do is get caught. And he was done. He was done physically and he was done emotionally. And there's no way he wanted to risk getting caught. We move on really quick. Again, there's motions in limine and other motions that I'm going to post today, because it's really important to see, you know, why the prosecution wants these things, why the defense doesn't want these things. But I wanted to really stick with the details on the facts in these calls and text messages first. Oh my gosh, I got the worst, not a DM, in my Twitter feed. You're not going to believe what some people are literally saying. Could it have been Ethan? These people have lost their minds. Anything to spin some incredibly pathetic, sick, you know, nothing to do with what the facts show, for their own aggrandizement, and I guess to get people to say, to look at what they have to say. Dylan, Bethany, Ethan, Santa, Kaylee, Maddie had nothing to do with these murders. They had everything to do with being victims. And anyone on any platform that is trying to say otherwise is completely uncredible. I'll leave it there. All right. I think I've touched on everything. The last thing I just wanted to talk about was the motion regarding information from Brian Koberger concerning his Amazon searches. And specifically, I think they're going to lead law enforcement to the purchase, the receipts and purchase, and inquiries as to the K-Bar knife. And when I say inquiries, can you imagine these searches? What's the best killing knife? What's the sharpest knife? What knife should somebody kill to kill somebody? Those haven't been said. I want to preface that. I'm not saying that that's been said, but I imagine that there's going to be some very significant searches because the defense wants the searches out. So if the searches were, hey, I need a new bath mat, I need a new shower curtain, you know, things like that, the defense isn't going to be fighting to keep it out, just like the defense is fighting to keep out the DNA profiles, the three of them that were found underneath Maddie's fingernail clippings from her left hand. Yes, it could be considered exculpatory. I'll say it again, because it wasn't a absolute positive finding of Brian Koberger, but there's a statistical analysis showing what probability, statistically speaking, it was that Brian Koberger is one of those three profiles. Remember, one's going to be Maddie, that's obvious. And then there's a statistical probability that the defense is trying to keep out that it's Brian Koberger's, and perhaps the other is Kaylee's. I don't know. I need to search further to see if they've released anything regarding the third profile. All right. That's a lot. Again, I'll keep posting today. I'll probably just try to stick with this, even though there's so many other crimes that went on that I wanted to post about that I researched last night. But let me see if there's anything on here. Yes, but the other roommate, Dylan, was messaging Uber. So I need to read that. I bet those that could be in the motions if you're saying that's true. And you know, I'll need to look into that. We don't know what that would be particularly, but I need to look into that. If Sarah, you read that in a motion, if it didn't come from a motion. And that's all I'm going to be reporting on. What has been in motions, what has been in search warrants, or what we know from, for instance, a long time ago, I looked at Strava And sure enough, because it's public information, Brian Koberger's Strava was in there. Strava shows how fast you can run a mile, basically how fast you can go. And it shows a lot of other things, but that intrigued me that he could run 6 minute miles. I wanted to see how in shape the guy was. And that clearly showed me he was in shape. So I want to say for everybody who's following me on this case, whether it's here or whether it's on Twitter X, I'm going to be posting from known facts or what law enforcement says or what we know to be absolute fact. So if the Uber came from any of the motions, I'll be discussing that. Let's see. Anything else? Messaged a private driver. Thanks, Luthy Mama. I'll take a look at that. All right, everyone. Thank you all. Thanks all for tuning in. I know this was a weird time, but I wanted to get on top of this. And until the next time, please keep Dylan and Bethany in your prayers. Please keep the naysayers and crazies who are pointing any fingers of them off your social media. And until next time, may justice be served on behalf of the Idaho Four.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.